the tokenized treasury space that where Beedle plays, which is still the largest asset, I think it's worth 2.3 billion or something now. It was like 300 million 2 years ago, and now it's 11 billion. I don't think there's any part of crypto that has grown that fast. So it kind of feels that way for tokenization, that we're at the end of the beginning. Now the beginning has happened. Now we need to get into the real growth because the space is so massive. As we discussed before, just taking, you know, 1% of or 2% of stocks on chain doubles the size of crypto. So that the fact that we have tens of billions of dollars still feels like very, very early days.
Bankless Nation, I'm here with Carlos Domingo from Securitize and Michael Blaugrand from the New York Stock Exchange. Carlos, welcome back to Bankless. And Michael, welcome to Bankless for the first time.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
There was an announcement out of both of your guys' neck of the woods from the Securitize New York Stock Exchange neck of the woods last week about a partnership between your guys' two companies about getting tokens, securities, tokenized on public blockchains. Now, I want to drill down into the details of that announcement because I just want to learn a little bit more about what this partnership means, how it works, and like some of the net products are at the end of it. And so we're going to go line by line. I just want to start reading off some of the first lines in this announcement just because I want to get down to the actual nuances of it all. The first line is Securitize is named as the first digital transfer agent for the New York Stock Exchange. What is a digital transfer agent? What role does that do in the whole world of securities and trading them and all that kind of stuff?
I guess I can take that one since it's about Securitize. Yeah. So every publicly traded company or every ETF, anything that trades on a national exchange has a transfer agent, which is responsible for keeping the books and records of who holds the securities, which in publicly traded companies, most of the only thing you see is DTCC because all the shares are under DTCC. Most people don't realize that when you hold shares on Robinhood, you actually don't own the shares. The shares are under the central securities depository. But in any case, you need a transfer agent. So if you wanted to issue tokens outside of, you know, current market structure on a blockchain that represents the same instrument, the same equity, the same QSIP, the same rights, voting rights, splits, dividends, etc., the natural, let's say, entity to do that is the transfer agent. Securitize is a transfer agent since 2019. We refer to us as digital in the sense that we use for our ledger technology, our public blockchains, as opposed to, let's say, more traditional, database technology that other transfer agents use. And all our procedures are all digital, right? We don't do anything with share certificates or paper certificates or other type of like non-digital activity. So we have been accepted by the New York Stock Exchange for their new venue, which I guess is the next thing that we need to explain what it is, to be able to then work with publicly traded companies, issue tokens that represents, you know, native representation of equity, and then, you know, those tokens will trade on the New York Stock Exchange digital venue.
Why does managing investments still mean juggling multiple apps, accounts, and currencies? Crypto trades around the clock. Stocks, ETFs, and commodities are moving on-chain. Yet most platforms still keep everything split apart, turning diversification into unnecessary friction. BitGet is delivering a different kind of experience with its universal exchange. One platform where users can access crypto, tokenized stocks, ETFs, and other assets in the same place, all traded directly using USDT. No constant transfers, no currency conversions, just a single account built for how markets actually move today. As the line between crypto and traditional finance continues to blur, BitGet's goal is straightforward. Make trading and investing simpler, not more complicated than it needs to be. Learn by clicking in the link in the show notes. This is not investment advice. If you're already holding SOL, here's something you may want to pay attention to. Galaxy One just launched Solana staking, and you can earn up to an estimated 6.5% in variable staking rewards on your SOL with no platform commission fee charged throughout December 31st, 2026. While many other platforms charge up to 35% commission fees on staking rewards, Galaxy One offers you 0% platform commission through December 31st. Other fees may apply. You should see the terms. This is powered by Galaxy Digital's own validator infrastructure, one of the largest Solana validator operations in the world, and now available to individual investors directly within the Galaxy One platform. Once you stake, rewards accrue and compound automatically. No active management needed. You can track everything in one place, including balances, rewards, and tax reporting through TaxBit. Getting started is straightforward. You can buy SOL directly in the app or transfer it in. If you want to put your SOL to work, you can now start staking on Galaxy One today. Click the link in the show notes to learn more and get started. not investment advice. So as I understand it, what you just said is the digital is more of just a word that you guys added. There's no such thing as like a digital transfer agent.
No, transfer agents. Industry in general refers to blockchain-based transfer agents or digital transfer agents.
Okay.
And Carlos, just so we understand, because we don't have this concept with our crypto native assets, of course, right? There's no transfer agent. So what data does the transfer agent have? Is that sort of like an ownership cap table of who owns what?
So basically, the regulated, we are the transfer agent for Beedle at BlackRock and for other products. So it's basically the regulated, it's an SEC registered entity, and that basically manages the securities on behalf of an issuer. So you basically issue securities, you control transfers to update the cap table, you pay dividends, you do, conduct votes if you need to, you do a sort of asset servicing if there's any type of, somebody needs to move their shares or somebody lost access to their shares. In the case of a blockchain, somebody lose access to the private keys and you need to burn and reissue. Like all that work is what a transfer agent does.
Okay. And every security has to have a transfer agent. It's in the regulations. And I guess moving this to
not
kind of
every
crypto.
Security.
Not every security. Okay.
Some securities is mandatory.
Okay.
Like registered securities, publicly traded securities are mandatory. Reggae Plus securities is mandatory. Most funds is not, private funds is not mandatory, but asset managers tend to use it because it's safer to use an entity to do that. But for instance, a private company, like let's say, the shares of Bangladesh, you can just keep them in Carta and you don't have a transfer agent. You just have a piece of technology to do it, but not an entity that controls the cap table of who owns shares in Bangladesh. I'm assuming you have a company called Bangladesh somewhere.
Does that mean that all publicly traded companies, or at least the vast majority of publicly traded companies, have a transfer agent?
You can't go public without a transfer agent.
Okay, can't go. Okay, and so if we want so there are tokenized securities on chain. There are a bunch of different ways to do this. One of the ways out there is like Ondo's model, which it's not a true native security.
No, it's not like equity.
Yeah, it's yeah, exactly. And so what we're talking about with a digital transfer agent is bringing the word native. So the token itself is the equity. It is not a representation of the equity.
Correct.
It is not an IOU of the equity. It is the equity, and making it the equity is because of the transfer agent.
The Ondo and other companies model. The problem that does have, besides that they block the US because the way they do it, probably not regulatory compliance here, et cetera. But it's also that every tokenized equity, which because it doesn't represent the actual equity, you end up having five different versions of the same thing, which none of them is the real equity. Like you can go to rwa.xyz, you can see there's six different versions of tokenized coin, which none of them is actually equity on Coinbase. They're all different derivatives issued from different jurisdictions with different counterparty risk towards the company that is issuing, different rights. Some of them give you voting rights, some of them don't. Some of them accrue dividends in one way, some others in another. They don't track splits. Like I think Ondo had a problem recently where one of the shares in the public markets didn't split and they didn't do a split and it was trading at five times different price, et cetera. So I think that introduces a lot of fragmentation and obviously creates issues for market making, for investor disclosures and investor risks of taking counterparty risk. This is just basically like buying a share through Robinhood, but then you get it on your wallet in tokenized form.
Securitize is named as the first digital transfer agent eligible to mint blockchain native securities. I think we kind of just did a little bit of that. This is truly a native to the blockchain security. It's on IOU. It is that security. But the question I have for you is, Carlos, is on which blockchains is this chain agnostic? Are there specific chains under consideration? How are they selected? Blockchains can mean a lot of different things. And so talk to me about that nuance.
From our tokenization point of view, and I'll let Michael answer the question about where the ATS, the trading platform sits. But we support most of the major public blockchains, obviously Ethereum, but we also support most of the L2s. We support Avalanche, we support Solana, of course, we support Aptos, etc. So we will be able to tokenize once we work with the issuer in any of the public chains and then being able to move tokens across chains if required to be able to then deposit them on the trading platform for trading. So
you're chain agnostic, but then who determines on which chain does the asset go?
Typically, we work with the issuer.
The issuer chooses that.
Agree on that because we are a service provider, right? Like we're not going to impose things. We obviously have a view of which chains to use. As you guys know, BlackRock launched on Ethereum first and it was only on Ethereum for a period of time. And then after that, they started going to other chains. We do a lot of also kind of due diligence on the chains to make sure they're sufficiently decentralized, they haven't had downtimes and, mm-hmm. and things like that. So, but ultimately the issuer is their securities, right? Like we don't do things without the issuer permission as opposed to other tokenization models out there.
Okay, so there's a preference on the issuer and the issuer can just choose based off of whatever their particular preferences
are. And quickly, the issuer here, who is the issuer? Is it the company with the stock? That's the company with the stock. So every issuer could have a different preference around this, right? Like Exxon might have a different preference versus like Bank of America in terms of where their stocks might be issued.
That's correct.
Could you do multiple places? You could just issue them. There's no restraint here.
There's no restriction for us. We can either do like we do on the case of BlackRock, every ledger, let's say every public blockchain is treated as a separate share class of the same fund, or we can just aggregate tokens across multiple chains and the cap table span across different ledgers and we provide transparency for the issuer with respect to that.
Okay, let's get into the third part of this line that we're breaking down bit by bit. Okay, starting from the beginning, Securitize named as the first digital transfer agent eligible to mint blockchain native securities on the upcoming New York Stock Exchange affiliated tokenized security platform. Michael, this is where I'm tapping you in. What is this? What is the digital trading platform? Tell us about what that's coming down the pike.
Yeah, happy to. Glad to finally get in the game. So we're launching a new trading platform. It'll be an ATS. It stands for an alternative trading system that will be adjacent to the existing traditional exchanges mm-hmm. that will trade tokenized equities versus stablecoins. We'll support what I, you know, often describe as kind of crypto native user experiences. So things like 24/7 operations, things like instant atomic settlement, which are vastly different than the traditional exchange operations and rails. But we're going to conform with most of the significant market structure conventions of the SEC, FINRA, and the broker-dealer subscribers that'll be participating on this platform. So it's going to use on-chain settlement, but off-chain matching. So it'll be using the NYSE's existing matching technology, market data technology, order entry technology, allowing for the community of broker-dealers who already trade on our exchanges to have a very, you know, low friction glide path into supporting the on-chain settlement that we believe a lot of retail investors will be excited to take advantage of.
So with this platform and the tokenized securities that go on to the ATS, the alternative trading system, is it its own blockchain or is it aggregating the security tokens issued by Securitize that are issued on Solana, Ethereum, all the public blockchains? Is it aggregating those or is it its own thing? Talk to me a little bit about the backend and infrastructure.
Great question. So the way to think about our system is we will run a, you know, private permissioned on-chain core ledger that's going to allow for inventory to be brought in or brought away from the platform from either digital transfer agents like Securitize or from DTC, which is the traditional book entry depository that will allow for tokenization upon request for previously issued securities. In both cases, securities are tokenized, either natively minted, like Carlos was describing, or converted. They're moved into the custody of the broker-dealer operating our ATS, and then they're available for pre-funded trading and instant settlement versus stablecoins when they're sold.
Okay. I'm still looking for a little bit of clarity on where those assets actually live. That question makes sense.
So in the example of a digital native, you know, issued token, let's say, you know, Carlos works with an issuer and they decide that they're going to issue natively on Ethereum. Carlos, through his broker dealer, can move those from that, you know, Ethereum wallet into a broker dealer wallet in our infrastructure.
I see.
we will then, you know, make that available on our risk systems and our trading platform, and it can instantly be sold on behalf of that client.
Okay. And so the trading platform, the digital trading platform that you guys, I don't know if this was the first time that this was announced, but in this announcement with you guys in Securitize, you named this digital NYSE affiliated tokenized securities platform, the ATS you talked about. It is, what I'm hearing is, it is an aggregator of tokenized securities on Ethereum, tokenized securities on any blockchain, any layer two that you guys choose to integrate. Those tokenized securities will be sent to the wallet of a broker dealer. And then that is the person which is matching the TradFi stack of equities, that then that all of that gets pointed to the ATS. And so the tokens are on chain, they're on the public blockchains, which is what I'm kind of excited about. And then for this NYSE affiliated securities trading platform, it is done through, you send the assets to a broker dealer, and then those get deposited into your account, and you can go and make trades like that. Is that right?
Yeah, I think you put it well. We haven't used the word aggregator before. I think that's a fair word to use. The way we've described it is that we're going to have, you know, fairly broad interoperability with a number of different blockchains for settlement purposes. Having EVM compatibility to have broad access to wallet infrastructure and, you know, developer, you know, kind of community applications is important for us. But we know we're going to need to support a range of different solutions, as well as a range of different GeniusAct compliant stablecoins for funding purposes as well. So yeah, interoperability will be, you know, a critical component of the solution.
Michael, the New York Stock Exchange, you guys have over 2,400 assets. Will all of these assets be available at some point, or is this going to have to be sort of an issuer by issuer conversation?
I think it's going to be a dual track process. They're going to, you know, be crypto forward, you know, tech forward companies that are very interested in being early amongst the native issuers. And you know, Carlos mentioned BlackRock. That's a great example of a company that, you know, actually wanted to take a fund and make it digital native to try to position it for access and utility amongst, you know, sort of the crypto native investor community. And there are a bunch of both corporate and ETF issuers who want to be among that cohort. At the same time, there are, you know, a bunch of traditional companies that may or may not decide that they want to actively engage in tokenization. Whether they choose to or not, the reality is that the DTC, which is the Central Securities Depository for U.S. equities, has announced that they plan to make all of their securities available for tokenization conversion over time. They're starting with the Russell 1000, so the 1,000 securities that are in that index, plus a number of other ETFs. So eventually, I didn't anticipate that all NYSE-listed stocks, you know, all stocks listed on other exchanges as well, will be available for, you know, tokenized trading. But I think in, you know, at the vanguard, you're going to have companies like those that are working with Carlos and, you know, prospects that haven't yet come to market that are interested in going public as tokens, really leading the charge.
How long do you think that'll take to play out until the point at which we have basically all publicly traded companies, or close to all, 80% say, all of them available on chain as well?
So I think there are more than, you know, there are more problems to solve than just making the tokens available, right? There's a lot of complexity in managing the sort of recreation of all of the TradFi infrastructure, the investor protections, the market structure conventions that, you know, issuers have come to expect and that the SEC requires under the law. So I think it will probably be the case that all U.S. equities could be converted into tokens, you know, within a couple of years. But I think your question is probably, when will tokenized trading become ubiquitous? And I think that's going to take longer because it's going to require not just minting tokens, but then creating the right infrastructure that those tokens have, you know, outstanding utility and can operate with an efficiency that's as, you know, excellent as the one that exists in the current market structure. So it's companies like Securitize, like NYSE, that are trying to build these platforms today to enable to, you know, sort of facilitate that migration over the next you know, let's call it 3 to 5 years.
Okay, 3 to 5 years.
Ryan, but I just want to give you like some metrics so you understand, sure, even if not everything moves, how big this could become very quickly. So first, I think a good parallelism is what happens with retail participation on IPOs. Because that was not available to retail people, and it started with Robinhood 5 years, 6 years ago. And then every single IPO now has a retail tranche, right? And at the beginning, it was some companies, only the most tech-forward ones, like Michael mentioned, that had that allocation, and it was only Robinhood, but then you got SoFi, and then you got E-Trade, et cetera. And then now you have SpaceX, which is apparently doing a $40 billion IPO that is saying that 30% will be retail, right? Which is massive. So I think that the tokenized tranche for IPOs and for trading for public equities will start small, and then it will grow over time. But given that New York Stock Exchange only has 44 trillion in market cap, and the whole market, if you add the competitors, is like 100 trillion. Even if it's just like, let's say, a 1% or a 2%, you're looking at 2 trillion, which is probably bigger. It's like the same size of the entire crypto market today, right? Because this is like the largest, you know, asset class out there, and the most liquid, and therefore the most suitable to put it on blockchain rails and make it even more efficient. It's an asset class that is very difficult to do things with it, because it's all in this very, you know, kind of rigid infrastructure and market structure, et cetera, that, you know, you can go and invest in NVIDIA 5 years ago, and today you've made a few million dollars and you want to borrow against it, and it becomes very difficult. Or, you know, somebody is doing short selling and is borrowing your shares and paying 35% to prime brokers, and you're getting 3%. And like, there's so many inefficiencies that people don't realize, that once this gets free of the existing market structures and put on blockchain, these things will open up. And I do believe we'll start small with one issuer, then 5, then 10, and then 100, and it will grow from there. So
that is a good reminder of how large this market is. So 100 trillion in US securities, it sounds like something. And the New York Stock Exchange is like 44 trillion. I mean, these numbers are pretty, pretty astronomical relative to crypto.
US market cap's around like 60 trillion. I think global equities is about 100 trillion. NYSE is the single largest market.
Okay. Amazing. And obviously, so goes the US. I think so goes the rest of the world. I want to ask another point about sort of how this works from a user perspective. So retail investor buying a tokenized security. Let's say my co-host here, David, he uses Robinhood, right? I'm a little older. I use Fidelity. Let's say, okay, so Fidelity's my broker. And so if I want in 5 years' time, all of these tokenized securities on chain, if I want to buy an asset like Exxon, which is listed in New York Stock Exchange, and I want a, I guess, tokenized version of that so that I can have it in my non-custodial wallet. And I can, by the way, I can bring that wallet to another broker if I want, because I'm sort of the custodian of that wallet rather than the broker. So I'm not locked into Fidelity. I can switch at any point in time. But I should have the ability to do that essentially through my existing broker. So I log into Fidelity, I go and I buy the tokenized version of Exxon, assuming they're an issuer that lists their tokenized security. And then I can bring that into my crypto wallet, and I can go take that wherever I want. That's the future state we're talking about, right?
That's exactly the future state.
I think you're describing a future state that's probable, right? It's not the immediate reality, right? In the immediate reality, these aren't likely to be permissionless bearer instruments. I think that we know that is the direction of travel. Some of the, you know, sort of wrapper products that, you know, you were describing before, David, that are in the marketplace offshore, those are permissionless because they sort of defer some of the complexities of complying with the US, you know, regulation. So I think in order to find the solution that's going to blend permissionless, you know, kind of self-custody and all the applications that we know are high potential with the sort of regulatory blessing in order to be within the sort of US perimeter, like, that work is still to be done, but it's, you know, kind of the rails that are being laid right now by firms like Securitize are going to help us get there.
But by the way, today with tokenized securities, you can have it on your self-custody wallet. The only difference is that wallet has to be whitelisted, right? Because you got KYC at some point, right? But you also KYC when you go to your broker dealer, right? You also KYC when you go to Binance. You also KYC when you go to Coinbase. Like, there is this negative connotation about, you know, having to KYC, and in reality, we're being KYC every other day in any other venue. And then the infrastructure is still permissionless, right? You can still interact then with, like, we integrate with Aave Horizon, or we integrate with, you know, with Euler and like lending markets, where the market itself is a permissionless infrastructure for lending, but the asset itself that you post as collateral is permission, and your wallet has been whitelisted at some point. But what you're saying, Ryan, about connecting to a broker dealer and being able to take your securities with you, yes, the broker dealer knows your KYC, they can whitelist the wallet, they will allow you to then move the tokens to your own wallet. And then if you connect that wallet to another broker dealer, then your securities have instantly moved. As opposed to today, where if you're trying to move securities, good luck with that. It's going to take you.
Oh my God, I've tried. It's exhausting. It's actually like literally phone calls. And at some points I've used fax machines in order to get, you know, securities from one broker to another. It's very different. It's very different than just like moving stable coins, let's say. And I wish for a world where it's as easy as that.
It will be as easy as that, as far as you've done whitelisted your wallet and you move this across whitelisted wallets, because as Michael said, these are securities and they're US, and therefore permissionless tokens today, you know, do not necessarily comply with securities regulations that force, you know, AML checks, that force, you know, if you need, the transfer agent needs to know who the holders are, and there's certain obligations for a transfer agent about knowing, you know, the name of the investor and things like that.
So Carlos, you bring up the DeFi and composability conversation here. So if I'm whitelisted on a particular asset, if I'm whitelisted, do I get access to the whole set of assets produced by this partnership, or do is it like issuer by issuer? How does that work?
You whitelist once with the transfer agent, and we whitelist your wallet.
My wallet.
Any security will be able to go there.
And then I tell you what my wallet is, and legally speaking, I am just claiming that this wallet is mine, rather than like my friend's who just wants to be able to, my offshore friend who wants to be able to own a security.
But the way we do it is we actually ask you to connect your wallet to our platform. So we know that you and sign a transaction. So we know that you have the private keys of the wallet.
Right. Okay. And that legally speaking,
like
is
a small amount of ETH or do wallet connect. Like we use the same wallet connectivity protocols that any DeFi protocol uses to connect to our platform. And then we know the wallet is controlled by you, and then we whitelist you.
Right. And then you have, as the transfer agent, you have my identity. You have the security added to my name, and then you also have my wallet where it's all kind of held. And so if I lose my wallet, I can go get the security on a new wallet, correct?
Correct.
Right, because I am the owner. It's not my wallet that's the owner, it's me that's the owner.
Correct. So this is not a bearer asset, as Michael said. It means not like Bitcoin or ETH, that is a bearer asset, that if you lose it, you lose it. This is an uncertificated security that is represented on our blockchain. And therefore, if you lose it, you can come to us, we'll verify that who you are, who you say you are, and then we'll then burn the security, the tokens on the wallet that you've got access to, and remint it on a new wallet that you've connected with us. So the custody risk of this is much lower than the custody risk of digital assets.
This would apply, Carlos, the same thing if my Exxon shares were hacked or stolen or something like this.
Correct. Or if you have share certificates, like paper share certificates, which believe it or not, still exist. And I don't know, and there's a fire in your house and they burn down, and you can do that, still your shares. So you can go back to the transfer agent and get them back. So,
what about if I want to take my shares and I want to put them in Aave? That gets a little bit more complicated. Aave, not a legal entity. You technically just need to whitelist the smart contracts, and then it can work. Legally speaking, I'm guessing it's a little bit more complicated than that. What are the nuances here that we need to understand?
Okay, that's a very good question. So there's kind of two paths to integrate with DeFi, and let's break DeFi in lending versus trading, because these are two different things. On the lending side of things, you know, there's kind of two paths. One is companies like Aave are basically building, you know, versions of Aave. In the case of Aave, it's called Aave Horizon, that are already designed to take, you know, tokenized securities as collateral. Mm-hmm. So they've already built all the necessary hooks there for me as an investor that I hold, let's say, Exxon shares, as Ryan was saying, to be able to post them on Aave Horizon and then borrow against it. And then there's a liquidator that will take them, like semi-structure as a normal DeFi lending protocol, but Aave has a separate marketplace called Aave Horizon that works for permission assets. Then there is other, we've released something called the Vault Registrar, which is basically a vault where any DeFi protocol can integrate this vault technology to be able to take security as collateral on their DeFi protocol. And we have some people like Euler, Loopscale, Zarta, that they are now integrating that. So it's the same protocol. They don't need to do anything that, and they just need to keep the collateral on a separate vault that you know we provide to them, because that vault basically does not change the ownership of the security, because you're posted as collateral, but you're still the owner until it gets liquidated. And then we have to whitelist the liquidators, because the liquidators might take possession of the security. So it's not actually a lot of friction, to be honest with you.
Whitelisting the liquidators is kind of similar to just like whitelisting a market maker. A market maker comes and
liquidators
says, hey,
are institutions, so they're already non-entities to any protocol, right? So
yeah, they're already a professional organization.
Institutionals, et cetera. So I do believe that. And by the way, this is a massive opportunity, right? Because if you think about stock lending, this is not something that is simple to do for people. Like as I mentioned today, just go and try your shares in Fidelity of Exxon, right? And try to get a loan against them. Try, and then next program, tell the audience the experience of doing that. It's going to be impossible for you to do.
Yeah, I'm never going to try.
You can
honestly,
take a margin loan against your entire portfolio to trade more. All brokers right. will give you that. But if you want to buy a house against your, you know, Exxon shares that have appreciated over time, good luck with that.
Yeah.
So these are things that are going to open up big markets. Also, you know, equities are a good source of collateral. Like a lot of trading firms deposit equities as collateral. And again, a collateral moves very inefficiently because the securities move very inefficiently, because moving securities from place to place is a cumbersome process. So tokenized securities will be able to trade there. Then they will be liquid because of the New York Stock Exchange venue, et cetera. So this is going to open a lot of interesting applications.
So Carlos, basically what I'm hearing in summary is that while it's not a trivial thing to whitelist a DeFi app, it is also not that complicated either. And that the idea is we will actually be able to have tokenized securities under the condition that we are whitelisted, KYC'd with the transfer agent. We will be able to have securities in DeFi apps. It sounds like we also need some participation on the DeFi app side of things. It has to be a two-way conversation, but it ultimately doesn't sound like there's any fundamental roadblocks between here and there.
I don't think so. I think it's more about educating the market towards that. I do believe that DeFi, because it's a very efficient lending technology and markets, has a very bad source of collateral for lending. So introducing higher sources, higher quality collaterals like tokenized equities or tokenized treasuries or tokenized, you know, CLOs and bonds, etc., into DeFi markets is going to make DeFi markets grow, because there will be more, you know, institutional participation. Because from a lending perspective, they are very efficient markets, right? But that's not what people are leveraging against in the traditional finance. So if we give them those tools, I think people will come and DeFi will grow again. Because keep in mind, DeFi was still below 2021 levels. People don't realize that we peak at 180 billion and now we're 100. So we need to do something about bringing institutions there, and that's not going to happen if you're, you know, lending against Dogecoin.
Bankless isn't just a name. It's a genuine belief that you shouldn't need permission from an institution to use your money. MetaMask has been around since the beginning of Ethereum, and they carry the same DNA we do. MetaMask was my first wallet. And well, if you haven't opened up the app recently, let me tell you, they've been shipping, creating the one app to finally replace your bank and exchange. You can trade just about everything right from within MetaMask. Leverage perps via Hyperliquid, prediction markets through Polymarket, tokenized stocks like Nvidia, and you can swap tokens gaslessly and across networks, and even spend your crypto with your MetaMask card at real merchants all around the world. It's better than institution services, but from a self-custodial wallet. And this is what we've been talking about for years. Money that's open and is happening. So give MetaMask's trading features a look at the link below.
Some exciting news. We are launching a new podcast to help people figure out the crypto cycle, how to navigate it. The best crypto cycle investor I know, his name is Michael Nato. He runs the DeFi Report. This is the guy that sent me a sell alert before the 1010 price drop happened. His cycle analysis has been absolutely on point. I've been following him for years. And this year, we started recording weekly podcast episodes. Each one, we get into his portfolio, what he's holding, the market structure, entry targets, fair market value of Bitcoin and Ether, and where we are in the cycle. There's new episodes that are released every Wednesday. They're 30 minutes. They're short. They're punchy. I think this crypto cycle is harder to navigate than most. So let's do it together. Go subscribe to this podcast. Search The DeFi Report wherever you get your podcasts, YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or find a link in the show notes. There's a new episode waiting for you now. One of the arguments that has been made recently on Bankless, and this is actually a debate we had with two professors, but maybe I'll give you Austin Campbell, who was on one side of the argument. He's a professor at NYU Stern. He's also kind of crypto native, very familiar with this. He actually argues that open public permissionless ledgers
the chains that we all love, the Ethereums of the world, for instance, the layer twos, are not necessarily the right place to tokenize securities. And the reason he says is because, like, what happens in the event of a hack? There's no kind of rollback. These environments are optimized for maybe for more for bearer instruments. They don't have identity. They don't have AML KYC. And so there has been a push for some real world asset activity to happen on more permissioned ledgers. This has been a debate that's ongoing. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this.
The Canton versus Ethereum.
Sure. Yeah. Weigh in on this debate. What do you think?
I don't think that's true. So public permission. So first, this debate to me feels like and you guys are a lot younger than me, but maybe Michael remembers. This is the debate about American Online versus the internet. No, American Online is safer because we control who puts their content there and who is accessing it, blah, blah, blah. And guess what happened? It died, and then the public permissionless infrastructure that is the internet is what flourished, right? Because open innovation happens on open networks, right? Because anybody's allowed to create new stuff. And that's why innovation happened there and didn't happen in American Online. So that's my personal view of the world, irrespective of the blockchain debate. And now, in terms of whether public permissionless networks are suitable for securities, I will tell you that if you do it through a regulated intermediary that has the ability, obviously you can't roll back what happens, right? But actually, in my opinion, that's a positive thing because it keeps track of what history has been if there's something that goes wrong. But you can always burn and remint to reverse a transaction because the keys of the smart contract that, you know, means those securities is in the hands of a regular intermediary, which is a transfer agent. And I know that people don't like the word intermediary, but this is a better intermediary than the intermediaries we had before in the sense that it's more, less friction, you know, less in less things it needs to intermediate, et cetera. But this is still sitting there to provide that peace of mind to people. So I don't understand why this cannot happen on Ethereum, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, on this episode, we have a representative from the New York Stock Exchange. And Michael, I'd ask you, I mean, is there anything scary about permissionless open ledgers? Any reasons for you to prefer more permission structures rather than something open like Ethereum?
Well, I think our regulatory obligations are going to be the same regardless of the technology choices we make. I mean, today, we're working under securities laws that were written in the 1930s that didn't even, you know, begin to contemplate, you know, electronic trading. We still have to, you know, kind of meet those standards, even though we're employing much more advanced technology. And I think whether we choose to use, you know, a sort of private chain or a public permissionless chain, we're going to have the same, you know, responsibilities. How we meet them, how we manage, you know, kind of all of those will be different implementation choices. And frankly, between NYSE and our parent company, Intercontinental Exchange, we expect to use a number of different L1 and L2 selections across our 6 global clearinghouses as we begin to support tokenized collateral, the NYSE tokenized trading venue, some other projects that we're developing. So I think, you know, you're going to see us probably use a number of different architectures, a number of different technology selections. But I don't think that it's going to be, you know, I don't think it's particularly fruitful for, you know, the community to sort of beat each other. One variety or another, you know, is going to be permissible. I think all of these could be used. It's all about how you use them.
But by the way, the SEC published a few months ago an FAQ where they explicitly said that transfer agents are allowed to use public permissionless networks to keep what is called the master securities holder file. It's a technical term that means the cap table, if you want, which is where the record of owners of the security. So they explicitly said it's okay to use that public permissionless network. So I don't know who this professor is and why he's saying that it's not possible because the regulator doesn't agree with that. So I mean, as far as the regulator tells me it's fine, I'm going to do it.
We'll make sure to clip that and tag him on Twitter.
Maybe I follow him on Twitter and I don't know who he is. Pretty sure he had a reason to say that, but my point being is the regulator doesn't agree with that. So, and by the way, this was the argument on the Gensler time of, you know, saying whether, you know, because we were using a public chain, whether we could represent securities there. And they asked us to have a separate license for doing custody. You remember these Prometheum guys that got this special purpose broker-dealer license, et cetera? And that has all disappeared with the new regime, right?
Michael, I want to learn a little bit more about this NYSE-affiliated tokenized securities platform. Allow me to read between the lines, and then you can correct me how far off course I get. So you have New York Stock Exchange, great business, been around for decades, maybe longer. I don't know, actually. Now that
230 plus years.
Thank you.
Centuries.
That's the centuries. And then along comes blockchain, like a new way to do a lot of very similar things that the New York Stock Exchange is doing. But you don't want to like disrupt what you got going on. TradFi is still basically all of finance. Don't really want to like shift that up. But we have this parallel financial system. It's got tokens. It's got blockchains. And you also need to kind of keep up with the times. And so you're building you're not replacing or disrupting yourself. You are building a new parallel trading venue to go along with the new parallel financial system that runs on blockchains. And it's kind of like, we'll get growth over here. And if the tokenized thing and the blockchain thing really works out, we've got our flag planted with this New York Stock Exchange affiliated tokenized securities platform. And the old New York Stock Exchange kind of just stays doing exactly what it's doing. It'll remain like trading with trading hours, while the new one has 24/7, 365 trading markets. And the new New York Stock Exchange tokenized trading platform will just grow alongside that market independently of the New York Stock Exchange. And if it gets to as big as the New York Stock Exchange one day, that's great. If it doesn't, also great. But we have now two independently moving parts of the New York Stock Exchange. This is kind of like my read on the whole thing. How close am I?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair read. The reality is the New York Stock Exchange is the home of 2,400 listed companies who absolutely depend upon the liquidity and the kind of market infrastructure that ensures that they are priced at the right values, that they're able to support the capital formation and fund the entrepreneurial visions of those companies' leaders to the benefit of public investors. So it has a very important mission. It does that at great scale. A single closing auction can be hundreds of billions of dollars of value transferred. So these are really significant markets that we expect to evolve, but will evolve very deliberately. Meanwhile, with an ATS that's running alongside, we can be more experimental. We can support the issuers that want to, kind of dive in versus dip a toe in into the space. And frankly, I think we've grown up over those 230 plus years, and certainly, since the 1930s when the federal securities laws were enacted, we've grown up in a world that was very deliberately, broken into swim lanes, where there were segregations of duties, where you had clients represented by broker dealers, and broker dealers traded on exchanges, and exchanges had market makers, and those transactions were held by clearinghouses and custodians, and like everyone had a distinct job on purpose. And from time to time, we've had reminders of why having those segregation of duties matters a lot in traditional finance. But we're now in a world where on-chain infrastructure can create so much utility for end investors that the risk reward of potentially like blurring those swim lanes begins to be pretty compelling. And so I think it's not just NYSE can kind of run the traditional business and see if it works out with blockchain. I think our expectation is like this is going to transform. Like we are going to need to move this business on chain. There's some other market participants who are sort of waiting to see if the existing utilities can evolve. And once they evolve, then that will be kind of the cue to begin to do things in tokens. Our view is that we need to be building. We need to get very familiar with the technology. We need to work with leaders, both in the issuer community and in the infrastructure community, to become really conversant in that space. And so, I don't know how quickly it'll be 1%, 2%, 5%, 10% of U.S. equity trading volume in tokenized form. But by 2036, 10 years from now, like I'll be stunned if it's de minimis. And so I think it's crucial that, given the pace of technology adoption and change and regulatory change, you need people to sort of stake out a leadership position and begin. And so we're really excited to do that. Admittedly, beginning in sort of a modest way with, you know, a reasonably narrow, you know, field of what's permissible, but trying to build in a way that'll be extensible and allow for that composability, self-custody, and, you know, greater utility that we know is the real promise of on-chain infrastructure.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I'm curious about is, to what degree does successful innovation on this alternative trading system, things like 24/7 markets, you know, the tokenization in the back end, all the innovation that is being allowed to be unleashed in this alternative trading platform, how much might we see actually flow backwards into the traditional stock exchange? Like, there is a big conversation, there has been ever since blockchains really became notable in TradFi, of like, oh, you know, the direction of travel is to 24/7, 365 markets. Is that something that the New York Stock Exchange wants? Is it like open to doing that level of transformation for this 235-year-old business? Or is it just saying, hey, if the market truly values 24/7, 365 markets, it'll be expressed on this alternative trading system, and we'll all just allow that to grow. And, you know, tradition on the New York Stock Exchange side of things, tradition is tradition, and we just have two options here. Like, will there be a blurring of the lines, or more of a separation of responsibility?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. Our view is this is going to be a long-term migration from traditional, you know, the same way that we moved from floor-based trading to electronic trading. I think we imagine, like, we will see 25 years from now, we went from electronic trading to digital on-chain. I don't think it's going to move, you know, in kind of a consistent pace across all investors. I think retail will move faster than institutional. But you're already seeing the traditional exchanges expand their market hours to 23 hours, 5 days a week. So, you know, some of the, you know, sort of, you know, agitation that began as kind of pesky retail, you know, desires has now already impacted things like the consolidated tape and FINRA's, you know, trade reporting facility. These like very, very, you know, kind of TradFi infrastructure capabilities. So I think it's, you know, question of when, not if. I think, you know, Ryan gave his example of, you know, trying to move things, you know, in a Fidelity account, and like he's choosing to buy the tokenized version of Exxon, you know, in order to be able to have, you know, his sort of self-custody. I actually think a more realistic example is like in the future, he won't need to make a determination to buy a token or not buy a token. People like NYSE, people like Securitize, like we're going to abstract away all of that complexity. You're going to own Exxon. You're going to have the ability to move to a different broker. You may have the ability to lend it yourself. You're going to have, you know, kind of a much broader menu of capabilities as an individual investor. That will depend upon tokenized infrastructure, but you're not going to have to be an expert in, you know, blockchain in order to make use of those types of capabilities. I think bringing those to a broad audience, like that's the work that's ahead of us.
I'm going to ask you a regulatory question, because a lot of this has been brought about by a much clearer regulatory stance from Paul Atkins at the SEC, and obviously the new CFTC chair, Mike Selig, and including, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, they provided some fantastic guidance with respect to a taxonomy for which crypto assets might be securities and which are commodities. And surprise, surprise, by the way, if it was a security before, it's still a security. So tokenized securities will be securities. I think I have a question about the legislative process, and maybe like, do we still need the Clarity Act for the New York Stock Exchange and for Securitize to proceed with tokenization? I know it would be nice, like acts of Congress can be nice, and they're almost hard-coded into the United States operating system, so we don't have to worry about what regulators' regime shifts might bring in terms of changes. That said, we do have some pretty clear taxonomies and rulemaking guidance coming from the CFTC and the SEC. It's hard to imagine, even in a future administration that's maybe a little more dim with respect, dim in many respects maybe, but dim, their view of crypto is more dim, and they try to reverse some of this. It's unclear whether much can be reversed. I guess what I'm saying is, do we still need the Clarity Act? Is that still important? Or can you guys proceed if we don't get that with the full tokenization plan as is?
We can proceed with, you know, virtually no significant regulatory exemptions and no legislative change for the NYSC's tokenization platform. That being said, getting a bill done, I think, is very valuable to the marketplace. You know, our parent company, Intercontinental Exchange, operates global futures markets, global clearinghouses. Having a bill that enshrines the intention of Congress into law to ensure that we, you know, don't have, you know, kind of a, you know, let's say like kind of a arbitrariness in regulatory shifts, I think will be very, very valuable.
I don't think that we need the Clarity Act for tokenization. I think if you look at the Clarity Act, it's more about providing clarity about which digital assets are securities and which ones are commodities, which has been the main problem in crypto. Primarily because most of the tokens in crypto are, people are, you know, saying they're not securities, and the previous administration took the view that everything was securities, right? Including like ETH and Solana and things like that. And so that's where that's why it's called the Clarity Act, because it's attempted to provide clarity there. But you started the discussion, Ryan, saying tokenized securities are securities. So there's clarity already there. Like nobody's arguing that if we tokenize Exxon shares, it magically does not become a security. By the way, some people in crypto are trying to do that to create regulatory arbitrage and go in and do shenanigans offshore, et cetera, with securities to try to bypass securities regulations. But at least here in the US, a tokenized security is a security. You need to follow the same securities regulations. Now, are there other things beyond the Clarity Act that we could benefit from that will allow more things to happen on tokenized securities? That's a different discussion. We certainly, as a transfer agent, you know, the Clarity Act actually talks about modernizing transfer agents as one of the mandates, but it doesn't actually say what they're going to do specifically. That's an interesting area. Like, you know, I don't want to have, as a transfer agent, believe it or not, we need to cap the physical address of a person, which is completely unnecessary if I operate on the blockchain. I just want to have a wallet address and a name. I don't need a physical address. So there is, you know, other kind of things that will require, you could modernize there, like, you know, some of the Reg NMS rules that apply to market structure, like everybody should follow the same price, best execution. Or maybe if you trade on a digital ATS, maybe you don't need to do that, and market makers will figure out how to make markets efficient, like it happens in crypto, where you don't have those regulations and markets are efficient across Binance and Coinbase, etc. So there's other topics of improvement, but the Clarity Act, if it doesn't pass, I think it's really bad for the crypto industry, but it's okay for the tokenization industry.
We talked about how in order for all these equities to become tokenized securities, this is issuer choice. So the kind of like if Microsoft wants security tokens on Ethereum, it has to make that choice. It's not going to be because the NYSC said so. It's not going to be because Securitize said so. It's going to become it's an issuer choice. How do we convince them to do that? And whose job is it to do that? Is that your job, Carlos?
We're going to work together. It's not going to be my job. Obviously, that's my job for sure. But Michael, you can speak about that. But obviously, the one that has the relationship with the issuers is Michael. But to be honest with you, I think that once, like we've been talking to many issuers about this, the moment we announce that there's going to be a venue, a legit venue, because obviously it's a nice, right? So it's as legit as it gets, where these securities trade, the conversation has completely changed, right? Because the question before was like, yeah, sure, I'm going to tokenize, but what I'm going to do with the tokenized equity? What is it going to trade? Like, what am I going to be able to do with it? And you walk them through like a scenario, a future scenario of things you could be able to do that it was not a reality yet. Now this becomes a reality. I think you will get more issues because there's no necessarily downsides, right? You know, they'll get more investors, they'll get more liquidity, they'll get, you know, more happier investors. They will come up with new ideas. Like, I'll just give you one example. The beauty of tokenized equities is that you can just prove the ownership because you hold it in your wallet, right? It's a mm-hmm. irrevocable proof of ownership of a security. Well, today, it's impossible for you to prove that you bought Apple shares because, you know, yeah, you might show a screenshot of Robinhood, but that's not, they're not under your name. There's like 100 different broker dealers with different apps, etc. A wallet is a wallet and a token is a token. You can always, you know, validate on chain that you own a particular security. This could open up different ways to interact with shareholders, right? Because it could say, okay, you hold my securities, then I'm going to give you a discount or I'm going to give you a preferential ticket for this event or for this other one, which today is impossible to implement because it's impossible to verify ownership of securities. because there's no ledger that you can read and validate it, right? So I think that these will allow issuers to, you know, become more creative, especially issuers that have a lot of like retail following, of what they could do with their securities to attract more investors. So, yeah. Michael, you know, if you want to add anything.
Yeah. Michael, Carlos is on our side of the aisle here. He's a crypto person. I consider you to be on the other side of the aisle in the TradFi person. So like, do you agree with Carlos and our sentiment that like this is inevitable, or is it going to be maybe a little bit more nuanced than that?
No offense taken, by the way. No offense taken.
He's pretty good, by the way. He's pretty forward thinking. So,
our CEO Jeff Sprecher, you know, he has a great track record of seeing where the puck is moving, and I think he has a tremendous amount of conviction that, you know, we are going to be in a world where on-chain infrastructure is the core of capital raising, of trading, of clearing, of settlement. You know, it's so I think we would agree that it's you know, when, not if. But, you know, I think you have to demonstrate utility, because there's so much inertia, right? There's so much, you know, inertia in the existing system. And so Carlos just gave a couple of great examples where, you know, if an issuer can get new benefit from instantly knowing who's on their cap table, instantly knowing if someone's buying or selling, you know, that's something a CFO or an IRO would get really excited about. Now, institutional investors are going to, you know, do everything they can to obfuscate their activity in the market. So it's, even if technology could solve this, there may be reasons that it won't immediately come to bear. But I think, you know, we're going to have to, you know, find ways to tokenize the existing inventory, not just new issuance, if we want to really move tens of trillions of assets quickly. So I think it's going to be, you know, not just the sort of issuer by issuer progress that you know, Carlos and his brethren are pursuing, but it's going to take industry-wide shifts. And that's where regulatory clarity, no pun intended, you know, can be helpful, because you have these collective action problems that really need a catalyst that operates at the scale of, you know, a nation state.
Because of that inertia that Michael's been talking about, there is another way this could play out. And I'm interested in your take on this, Carlos. So love the idea of actual issuer-backed tokens on-chain that are securities, right? Because this represents actual ownership. On Bankless, we talk so often about the importance of property rights, and that gets you the closest thing to a property right as possible. There are these synthetic type token products, and even maybe perps as an example of this on platforms like Hyperliquid. And that doesn't give you actual ownership of the security or asset, but it does give you price exposure. It seems like price exposure is what a lot of traders at least are looking for. And a lot of the capital, quite frankly, is looking for. How does a digital transfer agent and kind of the slow path of getting all of these issuers and assets on chain one by one, how does that compete against the synthetic versions of these things that can just like be quicker, even if it's not giving you full ownership? It is at least giving you the price exposure, and maybe that's the product market fit. Maybe that's what people actually want. What do you think about this?
I would not put perps and derivatives in the same category. I think perps are valuable because, I mean, equity markets have future markets as well, right? And they coexist. And future markets and perps is a kind of a variation of a future market where the futures do not expire, right? But they also need the spot markets because they need to take their price from somewhere. And I was actually the other day with a company building perps infrastructure. And after we announced the project with the New York Stock Exchange, and she was saying, this is great because perps operate 24/7, but equity markets do not operate 24/7. So during non-market hours, you don't have pricing reference for spot price for perps, right? So I think that, you know, spot markets moving 24/7 helps perps. And I see them as completely different instruments. As you said, one thing is you want to own, you know, the stock, you want to hold it. If it goes up, you know, over time, you know, 10 times, you benefit 10x. Perps is a different story. You have a funding rate risk. You know, if you go up, but you go up like this, you can get liquidated and lose all your money and you need to purchase. It's kind of a completely different audience, right? So it's not about the same type of investors. And I think perps and spot markets are complementary, the same way that future markets complement spot markets. Now, the derivatives, I do think that once the native tokenization exists, why would anybody actually touch five different derivatives, all of them different, all of them with different counterparty risks, et cetera, where you have an actual asset that is what you actually want to do. So that's because derivatives is spot market. Those guys are trading spot markets. So that's why I want to separate them from preps. They're just trying to compete for creating a spot market for derivatives of equities. So I think those disappear once you have the real asset. And instead of having six different versions of coins, if Coinbase tokenized coin and there's a token that is the native representation of coin, why would you actually buy the derivative? Why would you actually take counterparty risk to a random company, have it to buy an offshore, you won't be able to access in the US, etc. So that doesn't, my view, go down to zero at some point. Now, obviously, you know, because there's nothing else, that's what people are purchasing.
Carlos, as we bring this to a close, and thank you, Michael and Carlos, for joining us today. There has been some rumor about Securitize, maybe it's more than a rumor, it's actually somewhat of an announcement at some point I may have seen, which is that Securitize was going to go public by route of SPAC at some point in time. Do you have an update on that, Carlos? What are the plans right now?
Yes, it's not a rumor. We actually announced that last year that we are merging with a Cantor Fitzgerald sponsor SPAC. It's called Cantor Equity Partners 2. It's already a SPAC that is trading. We've announced that we're merging with them. At the beginning of this year, we filed the S-4, which is kind of the filing you need to do with the SEC to approve the public filing and the public listing. And then we're now waiting for, you know, an updated S-4 and hopefully get the regulatory process towards the end and get listed in the next few weeks.
So I guess that brings the question, are you going to tokenize yourself and put,
of course,
put 100% your own stock on
the press release? We're going to be the first. It was part of the, when we announced, that was a condition for any SPAC we talked to that, you know, we want to tokenize our own equity because we want to showcase all the cool stuff that you can do with native tokenized equities and what best to do it with our own equity. So 100%.
Carlos, last time we had you on before this time was, I think, 2 years ago when we were talking about Biddle, and this was the beginning of real world assets.
You guys were the first one exploring it.
Yeah. What's, if we broaden this in the maximum view, what's been the progress in bringing real world assets on chain from 2 years ago and until now? What significant milestones have we accomplished?
Well, I think the growth of the entire space. And again, it's very controversial, the metrics, because what do you count as tokenized assets? Do you count these closed networks or they are not? But by any metric, this has been growing faster than anything else. It's grown faster than stable coins that have been growing. It's certainly grown faster than crypto that has been declining. So this has been the fastest part growing part of the market. I do believe that BlackRock entering the space was a catalyst for adoption because obviously they're a very influential company. The tokenized treasury space that where Biddle plays, which is still the largest asset, I think it's worth $2.3 billion or something now. It was like $300 million 2 years ago, and now it's $11 billion. I don't think there's any part of crypto that has grown that fast. But that said, I think we're still scratching the surface. I like last week, Adas Chair Atkins, in his speech, he said, we're at the end of the beginning. So it kind of feels that way for tokenization, that we're at the end of the beginning. Now the beginning has happened. Now we need to get into the real growth because the space is so massive. As we discussed before, just taking, you know, 1% of or 2% of the stocks on chain doubles the size of crypto. So that the fact that we have tens of billions of dollars still feels like very, very early days.
Before we let you guys go, I want to ask about the timeline for this whole thing. So this was an announcement of a partnership. When does the actual product happen? Is this like a 2026 thing or a 2028 thing? Michael, I think maybe this is a question for you.
Sure. So subject to regulatory approval, we'd expect to launch in Q4 of this year.
For Q4 of
issuers
this year.
That are interested, that's right. For issuers that are interested in native issuance, they don't need to wait for our ATS to be live. They can begin to, you know, work with Securitize and their peers to, you know, begin on-chain issuance. And then those products would be eligible for trading on our platform once it's approved.
Wow. Okay. So firmly in the 2026 timeframe. That's great. That's great. Well, congratulations, guys. Pretty cool to see some of the very early visions of tokenization manifest into partnerships that we can
Welcome
on
chain.
About.
Yeah. Welcome on chain to the New York Stock Exchange.
Thanks.
It's a big
great
deal.
To be here.
And it's bankless. There will not be banks there. It's only broker dealers and exchanges.
That's right. Doing this the bankless way would be fantastic. Guys, we've got to leave you with this. Of course, none of this has been financial advice. You know, crypto is risky. Even the tokenized security form, you could lose what you put in. But we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the bankless journey. Thanks a lot.